The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Well, I hope everyone is well this morning. So let's start off with a little bit of humor. I'm recording this in May, and it's a cold, rainy day in May. Very weird, even though it's the June 1st program. So let's start off with a little bit of life in these United States. After our Siamese kitten ran up our expensive curtains, snagging them, my wife took him to the veterinary to have him neutered, hoping it would calm him down. A few weeks later, my sister-in-law brought her new boyfriend over to meet us. Before entering the house, she offered him this bit of advice. Whatever you do, don't touch the curtains. A friend is someone you can text. Do I look good in yellow? And three dots appear and disappear twice before you get back. No. Update. My husband is mad because I didn't warn him the cake I put in the trash can does not taste good. I was visiting my sister in Tennessee when we noticed a sign placed by Civil War reenactors that announced, Civil War battle, November 6, 10 a.m. My disappointed sister asked, whatever happened to the element of surprise? And this is the June 1st program, but this was actually printed before Mother's Day. So on this Mother's Day, let us not forget just how much Mom have put up with over the years. No one makes more observations than a child sharing a stall with his mother in a public restroom. While I was applying face cream, my husband asked our daughter what I was doing. She yelled back, she's okay. She's applying oil of delay. Scene. Family at the dining room table. Daughter. Mom, is there any more open wine? Me, in the wine fridge. Daughter, there's a wine fridge? Son, that's what she calls the fridge. My four-year-old threw a wrapper on the floor, and I told him to pick it up and put it where it belonged. He put it in my purse. Five-year-old, just one more question. What are the lines on your forehead? Me, blank. Five-year-old, now they look angry. And then laughter, the best medicine. And it's a picture of two cavemen in a cave, and one of them's drawing animals on the wall with charcoal. And the other one says, my doctor says you should be drawing more fruits and vegetables. Sandy began a job as a school counselor and was eager to help. One day during research, she noticed a girl standing by herself on one end of a playing field while the rest of the kids enjoyed a game of soccer at the other. Sandy approached the girl and asked if she was all right. The girl said she was. But a little while later, Sandy noticed the girl in the same spot, still by herself. Approaching again, Sandy offered, would you like to be your friend? Okay, said the girl, looking at Sandy suspiciously. Feeling she was making progress, Sandy then asked, why are you standing here all alone? Because, the girl said with great exasperation, I'm the goalie. When the spirit doesn't move a thing. I'm so lazy, I'm more of an atrophy wife. I don't spring into action, I dead of winter into action. When I find myself walking through the valley of the shadow of death, I remind myself not to trust Google Maps. A plane is heading to Washington, D.C. when a politician in economy gets up and takes a seat in first class. The flight attendant sees him do this and asks him to return to his original seat in economy. But the politician says, I'm an elected official, I'm important, and I'm on my way to D.C. and I'm staying here. The flight attendant tells the pilot and the co-pilot about this. The co-pilot then goes to ask the politician to return to his original seat. But the politician insists again, I'm an elected official. I'm important. I'm on my way to D.C., and I'm staying here. The co-pilot returns to the cockpit and tells the pilot the politician just won't listen. I fly the D.C. route all the time, the pilot says. I'll handle this. The pilot walks back to the politician and whispers something in his ear. The politician says, oh, I'm sorry, and gets up and goes back to his original seat in economy. The flight attendant and the co-pilot are amazed and ask the pilot what he said to make him move. Easy, he says. I told him first class isn't going to D.C. You know the feeling. Hangry. A portmanteau that describes the irritability that arises from hunger succinctly gets at a very particular human emotion. Shouldn't we have more of these terms? Here are some clever nominees. Paralysis. The paralyzing anxiety you feel when confronted with bureaucracy. Pretendium, a mixture of frustration, ennui, and anxiety that washes over you when you realize you've been cornered by a known long talker. Cinevoid, The guilt that follows browsing Netflix and seeing an important film that you know you should watch but choosing John Wick Chapter 2, a movie you'll convince yourself you've never seen before. Re-embarrassment. A feeling of humiliation at the memory of an awkward or shameful experience from long ago, often unrelated to current circumstances. Creditphoria. The pleasure, denial, delusion, and mania of being in a storm you don't belong in and buying an item you certainly could not afford. Premoji. The feeling of searching on your smartphone for an emoji that doesn't exist. My most unforgettable character, Jerry's Dirt. When it came to selecting his final resting place, my father-in-law knew to scout the land he loved, with help from the entire family. And there's a bunch of pictures here. First, there's a picture of what looks like a rusty cabin with a bench out in front of it, trees all around. And then there's another view of the same cabin, but slightly different angle. And then there's a picture of a man, gray hair and a mustache, watching a beekeeper at work. And then there's another one with an older man, apparently the same man, holding a baby, pretty obviously his grandchild. And there's a picture of him and two kids lying in a hammock. And there's a picture of a gentleman standing in his garden, same gentleman. And there's a picture that looks like it's probably from the 40s or early 50s, the way the hat is, of a young boy sitting out in the woods. The cabin. Jerry McGahan was not well when he stepped out of his Montana cabin on a gusty mid-September afternoon in 2016. His hair was wiry and white. Steroids had swollen his face, rounding his usual angles of his jaw. He elbowed open the front door and slowly crossed the porch. His feet had memorized the distance. The cabin was older than he was, but solid. In 1973, he found it for sale at the foot of Mission Mountains, just north of here. He paid $300 for it and gathered some friends to help him take it apart. Jerry numbered the logs, loaded them onto a truck, and reassembled them along the Jocko River with his first wife, Libby. Using skills he learned from carpentry books in an eighth-grade shop class, he framed the windows, wired the outlets, plumbed the pipes, and built the cabinets. By the end of the summer, it became a home in this sylvan oasis. And there's furthermore, there's pictures of him building the cabin, putting it together, and a picture of him with his wife on the porch. The cabin and the surrounding gardens have a way of arresting people. Those who come down the driveway, whether the mail carrier or once the poet Allen Ginsberg, know that they are seeing something rare and beautiful, the fruits of an autonomous life. When a hospice doctor visited, he stepped out of his car, swept his gaze over the house, the mossy rock gardens, and the corkscrew hazel out front, and said, "It looks like a hobbit lives here." This is where I first met Jerry on a cloudless morning in 2007, shortly after I had fallen in love with his daughter in Missoula. Hilly first described her father to me as a writer and a beekeeper who never ate fruit out of season, refused to own a cell phone, bought almost nothing, and knew a lot about birds. In person, I found him to be self-possessed and encyclopedic, but simultaneously humble. He listened more than he taught. Hilly and I married in 2012 in the shade of the trees Jerry had planted behind the cabin. When Jerry was diagnosed with prostate cancer in 2014, Hilly was pregnant with our first son. The cancer was the type that could have been removed if Jerry had gone in sooner, but he thought of doctors the way he thought of mechanics. The more you saw them, the more they found a fix. His lifestyle of homegrown food and manual labor imbued him with the immortality of a tree, for which death is possible but implausible. Jerry never scheduled the checkup that could have sounded the alarm, and his truancy came with a price. By the time the doctor found it, the cancer was aggressive and inoperable. His oncologist said he might have months to live. Almost 3 years had passed. On that September day, as he stepped out of his house, Janet, his second wife for 35 years, took his arm. Her body was riddled with disease, too. A third round of breast cancer had metastasized to her bones. Until recently, they scheduled oncology appointments together, the way they once did to the movies. For a while, they were racing in lockstep toward the end. Now it looked as though Jerry would finish first. But before then, he had one bit of business left to attend to in the orchard, one final decision to make before the cancer pulled the rafters down around him. So with all six of his children and some grandchildren alongside, Jerry slowly stepped down from the porch and started walking. The birds. Jerry McGahan was born in the winter of 1943 and grew up in Livingston at the mouth of Montana's Paradise Valley, so I was right about the age of that photo. He was a scrawny, awkward boy with freckles and few friends, so he learned to entertain himself. Once he found a baby pigeon, which he brought home and named Sapphire. The bird became his companion, riding on his cap when he delivered the Park County news. Jerry soon became infatuated with birds. One day, in high school, he found a fledging golden eagle in a nest on a cliff outside of town. He brought it home and named it Tori. She lived in a large cage outside his house and ate prairie dogs that Jerry stored in the freezer. On weekends, he trained her to hunt rabbits. When Jerry went to University of Montana in Missoula in 1961, he brought Tori with him. She lived in an enclosure behind the gym, and between classes, Jerry would fly her on the mountain behind the campus. At UM, Jerry compiled his fastidious field research into a paper about the hunting habits of golden eagles. It's still one of the most complete studies on eagles in Montana. And he met Libby, a liberal arts major from Missoula who liked to hike as much as he did. They married in 1966, the same year Jerry finished his master's in wildlife biology at UM. Then he and Libby moved to Madison, where Jerry got a doctorate in zoology at the University of Wisconsin. As part of his graduate research, he received a grant from the National Geographic Study to study Andean condors in South America. Jerry filmed a documentary that wrote a story for the May 1971 issue of National Geographic. Libby took the pictures, including the cover photograph of Jerry with a giant Andean condor perched on his arm, and there's a picture of him here. Almost 10 feet worth of wings flared, seemingly ready to pick off Jerry's nose. Jerry named that condor Gronk, and brought it home with him to Montana in 1973 before donating it to a zoo. Jerry and Libby settled on a piece of cattle-trod land in Arley that to him was ripe with potential. They'd adopted their first child in Columbia and had named him Jay. In 1974, they had a daughter named Jordan. With a new family to provide for, Jerry bought a flatbed pickup, built some hives, and started a honey business that he called Old World Honey. After Jerry and Libby divorced, Jerry mated Janet, who had two sons, Simon and Duncan. Together, Janet and Jerry had two more daughters, Romy and Hilly. They were both born in the cabin, within earshot of the Jocko River, and like their siblings, grew up weeding the gardens and pulling honey alongside their father. Because Jerry spent so much time outside, beekeeping, gardening, or just walking, birds still inhabited his days. One morning in 2010, he walked out of the cabin and heard a song he didn't recognize. He found the bird in a bush and went back inside to consult his field guide. It was a Carolina wren. He reported to the Wildlife Department of the University of Montana, but they were skeptical. The Carolina wren is common in the East, but had never been seen in Montana until then. There's a picture of Jerry. He's got knee pads on. He's kneeling on a wooden branch, weeding his garden, and right next to him is a pigeon standing there and pecking at the ground. The dirt. From the moment he began living along the Jocko River, Jerry cultivated a sense of belonging to the place. He filled it with trees, flowers, and vegetables. He spent so much time working it that his geography became a sort of map of himself. To dispose of garbage, old kitchen timers, and children's trophies and other refuse, he put piles of stuff in the yard and covered it with a big, naturally sculpted lichen rocks that he and Janet quarried in the mountains. Then he filled in the gaps with soil and planted flowers. If you cared about the man, you cared about his flowers, and given the opportunity, he'd introduce you to them. Like the birds, they were among his closest friends, as were the trees. In total, Jerry planted 54 apple trees there, and began soon after he arrived. First, he planted the rootstock. He waited a year for it to sprout. Then he drove to experimental orchards to taste their apples. The next spring, he returned to cut wood from the varieties he liked and grafted that onto his young trees. Slowly, the rootstock and the grafts matured into trees. After a decade or so, Jerry picked his first apples. They were wonderful, unusual apples, with names such as Incarnation, Star Song, and Priscilla. He had a Sansa apples from Japan and an English variety called Osmeade's Kernel that originated in the 18th century. One apple, called New Jersey 46, has soft pink flesh that tastes like strawberry soda. Jerry then crossed his favorite varieties, hoping to combine one apple's flavor with another's texture, for example, or its storability. After 4 decades, Jerry's trees contain 175 kinds of apples, 82 standard varieties, and 93 of his own crosses. His favorite cross, between a Sweet 16 and a Gold Rush, had a clean, crunchy, and tasted faintly of fennel. Jerry called it the Jocko. Later in Jerry's life, I learned that he never actually ate his apples. He'd take a bite now and then to reel the texture and enjoy the flavor, but he spat out the pulp. He He made sure every last one of them was picked at peak brightness and distributed to friends, family, or the food bank. To me, the utility of an orchard was its fruit. But to Jerry, an orchard was a laboratory in which every apple was an incubator for its seeds. The fruit would ripen and rot in the season, but the seeds, they were eternal. On that September afternoon, we all filed into the grassy orchard where Jerry pointed out a limb of Jocko apples. They weren't ready yet, but we hadn't come to eat. Instead, we watched as Jerry swiveled his torso around the orchard, looking for something. Wind whistled through the tops of the pines as Jerry clutched his morphine pump in his left hand. "What about this spot here?" he finally asked. "You like this end?" "I kind of like this end, too." "You come in the gate and you have this spot to go to. You have to walk." He walked over to the spot and scanned the ground. "If it were camp, I'd kind of like my head to go here," he said, pointing to the earth. Duncan, his 42-year-old stepson, set a large rock on the ground. "My sleeping bag would come down this way," Jerry said. "Hey, Dunk, move that rock 2 inches to the left." Jerry was looking down now, making small measuring steps as if he were about to dive into water. Then he got on his hands and knees and turned and flattened his back against the earth. His palm lay flat on the grass, his head rested on the rock like a pillow, and his pain pump whirred beside him. "How do you like it, everybody?" he asked. "Okay?" It wasn't okay. Not to any of us, no matter how long we'd known it was coming. Death for Jerry was still inconceivable. Oxymoronic, even. But this man had to be confined to a single patch of soil. No spot was more fitting than this. Duncan gently sank a shovel into the grass on either side of Jerry's head, and again at his feet, upturning 4 divots of sod. No one talked. We were all staring at our feet and this plot of grass beneath an apple tree, next to a garden hose. This ordinary piece of dirt that debt would sanctify. We stood there, awkward under the uncertainty of it all. Jerry read the mood and did the kindest thing he could. He walked over to a tree and shook a limb so that a ripe Noreen plums rained down on us. It felt as if he'd shaken us too. Soon we were all stooping down to pick them up. The flesh was bright red and juicy. Janet walked over her husband and wrapped his arms around his waist. "A graveyard and an orchard," Jerry said. "They go well together." And there's a picture of him preparing strawberries for freezing with the author, a young man with a nice beard. The whole. With this decision made and his energy waning, Jerry turned back toward the house. As we walked down the driveway, some of his older grandchildren and one great-grandchild were already turning to the orchard with shovels. No one knew how much time we had, but it seemed sensible to dig the hole before the ground froze. In the end, wow, this is really moving. In the end, more than a dozen family members dug the hole. The job took several days. The physicality of the labor and the simplicity of the objective were a refreshing escape from the anguish unfolding in the cabin. After one spell of digging, I returned to the house sweating, and Jerry looked up at me with his pink recliner with soft eyes. "Thank you," he said quietly. Meanwhile, Simon and Duncan built a box. They scavenged scraps of wood from the honey house, the old size of Jerry's honey truck, pieces of his beehives, and the remains of an old sign Janet had painted for a local cafe. The sign became the lid of the casket. Inside, the boards read soup and salad espresso breakfast. The casket sat outside on the porch, a thing of beauty, with handles of purple-grained juniper and soft sanded surface. Our 2-year-old son Theo and his 3-year-old cousin Sella would bang on it gleefully as if it were a drum. In the midst of these preparations also came new beginnings. One afternoon, Jerry's daughter Romy gave birth to a daughter, Opal. Duncan drove Jerry into Missoula to see her, arriving just minutes after she was born. Jerry looked gaunt and exhausted, but his face glowed several watts brighter when he sat down and cradled his newest granddaughter. "You look handsome holding that baby," Janet told him. His dry lips smiled. "It's just reflected light," he said. The end. Eventually, we moved him from the bedroom upstairs to a hospital bed in the living room. Janet oriented it to face the window and the flaming red sugar maple outside. The room, like the rest of the house, was filled with curiosities Jerry and Janet had collected. There was a handmade violin from Mexico's Copper Canyon, a whale vertebrae they'd found on a beach, an obsidian hunting knife, a pot punctured by the teeth of a grizzly. The house hummed with stories. Hospice sent out waves of nurses, pharmacists, and social workers, even a massage therapist and a harpist. The nurses steadily increased the dosage of the pain pump. In the evenings, when the nurses had gone, Janet climbed into bed with them and ate ice cream and watched Trevor Noah. I was in the room on one of these evenings, sitting on the sofa. I watched Jerry look over at Janet, his companion of 35 years, the patient, gregarious artist, the right brain to his left. "Let me hold your hand," Jerry said. "Just to hold it, I guess." There's a picture of, at this point, of Jerry as a young boy, nice-looking boy, with his two younger siblings, and sitting, carrying newspapers, delivering newspapers, and sitting on a shoulder is his pigeon, Sapphire. We held vigil over his bed, shuffling seats around him, seating chairs to our superiors in the hierarchy of closeness. The grandchildren entertained themselves out there, throwing leaves at each other. Duncan's wife, Janice, sang Norris Jones. For long stretches, Hilly sat on the old saloon piano and played. Jerry's eyes brightened with the music. "Wow," he whispered. "Wow." They were his final words. A hospice nurse came to pronounce the death, looking tired but stoic. Janet brought down fresh clothes, his best pair of dark Levi's, a rust-colored corduroy shirt, a vest, and his sun hat. We washed and dressed him, resting his stiffening arms to the leaves. Then we laid him on a bed of shirker maple leaves inside the casket. I noticed his expression had somehow shifted. He looked chagrined when we washed him and contemplated when we dressed him. Now a faint smile had crept into his lips. He looked peaceful and a little bemused, maybe even proud. Janet knew he shouldn't go into the earth alone. She put a bottle of his home brew into the box, a pair of his hand-dipped beeswax candles, and a stack of their old love letters. His hunting partner, David Rockwell, put in a raven skull and a bison hoof. Jay Sumner's, Jerry's best friend from childhood, contributed a crumpled dollar bill, a miniature cribbage board, and the game's best hand, 3 fives and a jack. Hilly picked a ripe Jocko apple and set it into her father's palm. Some grandchildren arranged a bouquet of purple asters on his chest. Janet bundled his decades-old duct-tape parpa under his head as a pillow. The casket was now kind of a message in a bottle, a testament to the future of who this man was and what he loved. "Some of the best things in life are in that box," David said. We walked with Jerry to the orchard one last time. Slower load him into the earth. Duncan said a prayer. Janice sang a song. Swarms of woolly blue aphids hovered in the air like electric blue storm clouds. Then under a gray sky, everyone began filling in the hole. And the most alive person I've ever known disappeared into the dirt. Even his trees seemed to kneel. The following spring, when the crocus bulbs were poking out of the soil, again, as by magic, almost 3-year-old Theo asked Kelly and me, "Where's Grandpa?" We were out in Arley visiting Janet, and just then we were driving past the orchard. Hilly said, "Well, his body's in the ground right there." "But not his face?" asked Theo. "No, his face too," Hilly answered, "his whole body." After a moment I said, "I guess the answer is that we don't know where Grandpa Jerry is. His body is in the ground, but some people believe he has souls. And then when we die, our bodies stay on earth, but our soul goes up to heaven." "Or maybe they become a mountain," said Hilly. "Yeah," I said. "Or they live in that fervent person's favorite places." Theo considered this. Then he said, "I think he's an apple." We're not supposed to editorialize, and I wouldn't necessarily, but that was so moving. What a heck of a way to go. The feline mystique. Cats are absolutely obsessed with being just out of reach, the illusion of access, the original celebrity. Life well lived. Fast food was our love language. In a short, difficult life, a greasy meal and a soda were bomb for my father. Every time I eat a chicken nugget, I feel close to him once again. It's autumn again, the 8th since my father died, and I'm craving chicken nuggets. My father would have understood. I don't remember him saying, "I love you," which isn't a common phrase in Mandarin, his preferred language. We always had a bit of a communication issue, but his love language was the simple pleasure of processed food. I have a photo of the two of us, taken when I was 2, at the gleaming flagship McDonald's in Beijing. In the photo, I'm feeding my father a fry. We both beam. My father was the fun parent, the indulgent one. He introduced me to fries, Cool Whip straight from the tub, and fizzy drinks. My father never reprimanded me for overindulgences my mother did. He laughed. It didn't seem to matter then that his English wasn't fluid or that my Mandarin was already slipping away. Our language of junk food evolved into one of the secrets, a conspiratorial happy meal on our fishing trip alone, 2 liters of Coke guzzled before my mother came home. I felt honored until I began to understand that my father kept secrets from me, too. In the third grade, I came home newly evangelized to the danger of cigarettes and threw away my father's packs. He raged and promised to quit, but I kept smelling smoke in his clothes and car. My father was not virtuous. He was a man of vices and quick pleasures, processed food, nicotine, gambling, adultery. I didn't ask him why he turned to these. It wasn't how our family operated, and anyhow, language remained a barrier. Instead, I distanced myself. I knew the person I aimed to be, and that person was not reflected in my gambling-addicted, divorced, blue-collar father. He had become a shameful artifact, one I wanted to leave behind. I focused on my own life with the impersonal callousness of Luth. There's a picture of what looked like it was probably a Marlboro box stuffed with French fries. My father died 2 years after I graduated from college. He was 49. I was 22. I grieved his passing, and then I grieved the fact that I never fully knew him. There were questions I had never thought to ask and nuances hadn't been able to articulate in my language or his. I used to blame my father for the weakened body that killed him, a product, I thought, of his weakened virtue. But the older I get, the more I see myself compromising too. And so, each autumn I think, now I'm at the age at which my father followed his spouse to a country where he didn't speak the language. Now I'm at the age in which he was fired from his job and took a minimum wage gig. Now I'm at the age at which he found his first online gambling website, as irresistible to him as the dumb games on my phone are to me. At each intersection, I think, the age I am is far too young for the responsibilities he bore. How can I resent my father for being a product of such staggering, unfair world? I can imagine the giddy power my father must have felt upon moving to America to discover that McDonald's was now the stuff of every day. It was cheaper than fish, more accessible than fresh fruit, and simpler than a long-distance phone call to Beijing, in which he felt compelled to hide his difficulties, his loneliness, and alienation. And I can imagine, too, the balm of preternaturally spoozed processed meat, a tongue made clumsy by translation, how sugar might soothe an ego bruised by rejection, racism, and the need to ask whether a store accepts food stamps. Under such conditions, the demand for perfect future feels impossible, even cruel. I can imagine how it might be easier to hand your child a golden nugget, how the gesture is a promise of abundance and pleasure, however short-lived. There are vices we must allow ourselves, even if they are theoretically shorten our lives by a day or a week or even a year, because first we have to get through this day, this week, this year. Is it wrong to compare my father to a processed piece of deep-fried food? Because I think of him whenever I bite into one. It's a more faithful representation than the usual metaphors of fathers as safe harbors, rocks, or teachers. None of those rings true when it comes to my father. The next time the urge strikes, I'll have a nugget or two or four. There will be the rush of additives, the hit of engineered pleasure, and in that moment, in a communion across a golden crust, I will understand my father completely. Supersize me. Before 1882, the word jumbo referred to a clumsy person. But that year, P.T. Barnum bought a huge elephant named Jumbo to store in his circus, and the original definition expanded by several tons. And with that, I'm going to switch over to Consumer Reports, although we may end up back on Reader's Digest for a little while, because we don't have a lot of material left in Consumer Reports. Advances in windshield tech. Heads-up displays project information such as speed limit and vehicle speed onto the windshield, letting drivers keep their eyes on the road more of the time. Mercedes-Benz use augmented reality on some of its displays to help drivers navigate. What's coming? Augmented reality heads-up displays will soon project additional data such as underpass clearances and bold icons that will make cyclists and pedestrians far easier to see. Heads-up displays can improve safety by providing drivers with vital information without having to take their eyes off the road, says Kelly Funkhauser, who leads CR's vehicle interface testing. This technology will put even more information in front of the driver's eyes. And here's an interesting study. What makes cars really comfortable? Use our new comfort score to find your most relaxed and well-appointed ride for the money based on exclusive expert testing and evaluations. When it comes to buying a car, we believe consumers should find a vehicle that's safe and performs well. But Consumer Reports also evaluates aspects of vehicle comfort ride, noise, the front and rear seats, driving position, and access. We've rolled these evaluations into a new comfort score that you can use when shopping for a car. A brief test drive will tell you whether a car is quick or fun to drive, says Gabe Shenar, Associate Director of CR's Auto Test Center. But it takes a lot of time to really appreciate comfort. Comfort for us is also a question of safety. We find that a comfortable, fatigue-free dryer is more relaxed and likely to pay better attention to driving than someone who is aching because of an unsupportive seat or irritated by a stiff ride and road noise. What follows are the categories we individually assess that come part of our comfort score, with extra weight given to the first two. Scoring in each category is determined by the jury of testers who drive each car in their daily lives for thousands of combined miles. Our testers also come in all heights and sizes, ensuring that we take into account a range of perspectives. The number one item, ride. Our testers assess how well a car absorbs road bumps. A lot of engineering and expense can go into creating forgiving suspensions that help you glide you down the road. But in some cases, you might also sacrifice handling, says Schnarr. Sedans generally ride better than SUVs because SUVs need firmer suspensions to keep their taller bodies stable and under control. Noise. Irritating engine, wind, or road noise can drive even the most patient car owner completely batty, especially on long trips. CR's testers are used to assess noise by measuring decibel levels in COD cars, but we switch to a jury evaluation because not all noise is equal. Softer sounds, such as tire hum, can grate on the nerves more than some louder noises. Front and rear seat comfort. Our testers judge front and rear seat comfort and also take into account how well the seats provide continuous thigh and lower back support on long drives, something that's more difficult to assess during a traditional test drive. Driving positions. With each car, our testers determine the range of available seat adjustments. We also measure shoulder space, headroom, and legroom, and how easy it is to reach vehicle controls. Sometimes driving position is about space around you, Schnarr said. You don't want to feel hemmed in. Number five, access. How easy it is to get in and out of your car can make or break an ownership experience. As CR's testers spend time with each vehicle like an ordinary consumer would, running errands and living their lives, they take note of door width, door sill height, footwell access and head clearance, and seat height when getting in and out of the vehicle. If you drive locally and get in and out of the car several times a day, it can be inconvenient if you have to duck down or climb up to access your seat, Schnarr says. So what are the five comfort superstars? As part of our extensive autos program, CR determines each test model's ability to coddle. We believe you and your passions have the right to smooth and relatively quiet experience. To home in on our comfort champs in various price ranges, our data analysis took the test results for a ride, noise, seat comfort, and other variables and spun them into a new specialized CR comfort score. Here we highlight five of the highest scoring models on a 100-point scale in several vehicle types, sedans and 2- and 3-row SUVs. All of the vehicles in this feature are CR recommended. We left out pricey ultra-luxury cars, many costing in the six-figure range, because we expect them to already be really comfortable, and they better be. Midsize sedan, the Subaru Legacy. The Legacy owes its smooth ride to a suspension system that soaks up road imperfections with a trace of luxury cars that cost three times as much, keeping passengers unaware of most bumps. To its credit, the Legacy uses new technology to add to its comfort while staying in the lower price range. The optional turbocharged engine, for example, delivers a lot of power, and it runs quieter than the base trim's non-turbo version. The Legacy's quiet cabin is big enough to comfortably accommodate a variety of body types. The premium trim we tested came with two-way lumbar support seat adjustment, which we feel is essential. CR recommends the limited trim, which has more supportive seats than the base model, and also has a power front passenger seat. EyeSight, the standard suite of active safety features, includes adaptive cruise control, which can reduce stress in stop-and-go traffic by adjusting speed to maintain a safe following distance. And then it got a comfort score of 80 and an overall score of 84. It's got a good on front seat comfort and rear seat comfort, an excellent on ride, a good on noise, a good on driving position, a good on front access, and a good on rear access. Small SUV, the Subaru Forester. Oh, by the way, the price of both of these is under $35,000. The Forester lavishes you with comfort from the first time you open its large doors and effortlessly slide into the easy-to-access hip-height seats. Once inside, the elevated driving position gives you a commanding view of the road. We found the Forester to be one of the most comfortable SUVs toward the lower end of the price scale, with its great elbow room, endless hatch space, and on most models, a driver's seat with adjustable lumbar support. The optional dew zone climate control helps the driver and front passengers dial in their preferred temperatures for personal comfort. The interior can be reconditioned by remote start using Subaru's Starlink app, a nice treat on hot or cold days, although the feature is subject to a monthly service fee. Drivers also have great visibility among the best to be found anywhere thanks to slim roof pillars and large side windows, so no neck strain when backing out. Got an 80 comfort score and an 89 overall score. Got a front street comfort, got a good. Rear seat comfort, got an excellent. Ride, got a good. Noise wasn't that great. Driving positions, got an excellent. Front access, excellent. And rear access, excellent. And they show a picture of the interiors. They basically look almost the same. Large sedan, the Chrysler 300, 35 to 55,000. Flying under most people's radar, the Chrysler 300s have remained nearly unchanged over the last decade. That includes Chrysler's steadfast commitment to plushness, which seems to be the main point of this now-classic sedan. The 300 exudes a modern, good-handling version of 1970-style comfort, offering a smooth ride and lush seats. As part of this attitude, the 300 has a quite luxurious interior, plus a large back seat and a roomy trunk. The driver and front passenger seats come with power lumbar support and adjustment. The best combination is a smooth V6 and stick-shifting 8-speed automatic transmission, which delivers better fuel economy than the V8 and is available with all-wheel drive. Plus, the 18-inch wheels provide a smoother ride than the 20-inch version. Chrysler's Uconnect infotainment system is extremely user-friendly, adding to the de-stressing atmosphere inside the cabin. Got an 82 comfort score and a 78 overall score. Got an excellent front seat and rear seat comfort, an okay ride, an excellent noise, an okay driving position, front access, and rear access. Midsize two-row SUV, Lexus RX, 35 to 55,000. The RX delivers a driving experience that accentuates comfort, tranquility, and luxury. Its soft suspension does a great job absorbing bumps, creating a smooth, relaxed ride. The silky non-turbo V8 engine provides lots of power without strain. The efficient hybrid version can glide along silently in electric-only mode, typically up to 25 miles per hour. The plush seats are wide and supportive and can be readily tailored with the power lumbar support. More expensive trims get height-adjustable lumbar support that takes it to the next level. The second row is roomy with a flat floor that offers adequate space for even the center passenger's legs. And the seat backs recline. Big doors allow easy access front and rear. The infotainment system's touchpad controller is one of the few downsides. The best strategy to avoid it by using voice command and steering wheel controls when possible. 85 comfort score, 80 overall score. Got an excellent front seat comfort, okay rear seat comfort, excellent ride, excellent noise, okay driving position, excellent front access, and okay rear access. Midsize three-row SUV, the Kia Telluride, 35 to 55. A well-balanced Telluride offers a mountain of features for the money, making it a worthy alternative to vehicles costing thousands more. There's a lot to like about this acclaimed SUV, and it especially shines in the comfort department. Wide welcoming seats and a comfortable ride combined with a roomy, quiet cabin and a smooth power delivery allow the big Kia SUV to punch above its weight. The front seats come with power adjustment and can accommodate a variety of body types. The third row seats are best suited for children, but a novel one-button control moves the second row of seats out of the way to give access. The three-zone climate control system, as well as an easy-to-use infotainment touchscreen, leather upholstery, and heated and cooled front seats on the EX version, contribute to an all-around tranquil experience. 84 comfort score, 97 overall score. Good front seat comfort, excellent rear seat comfort, good ride, excellent noise, good driving position, excellent front access, and excellent rear access. How to judge comfort on just a short test drive. A test drive doesn't last long, but it's your first opportunity to make sure the car is one you like and can live with. Here are a few things to consider as you evaluate overall comfort. Seat comfort. Make sure there's adjustable lumbar and bolster support, which will help stabilize you during cornering, that neither feels tight nor digs into your back. Are the cushions too soft? They might seem plush at first, but they may not provide adequate support on longer drives. We like seats with multiple adjustments, two- or four-way lumbar support, an adjustable bottom cushion, and adjustable bolsters. Rear seats should be supportive and provide adequate headroom and space for rear passengers' feet to fit under the front seat. Driving position. A good driving position keeps fatigue to a minimum. Look for a car with tilt-adjustable telescoping steering column. We believe this feature is key for helping drivers of various sizes find the best position for arm comfort. Neither the center console nor the door should intrude onto the driver's leg space, and the left footrest should be at a good angle and distance. Ride comfort. Make sure the ride is smooth and comfortable by taking the car on a potholed road to feel whether the suspension adequately soaks up the road imperfections. Low-profile tires may look nice, but they can make for a rougher ride on a bumpy road. A stiff suspension can get irritating after a while and lead to driver fatigue. Noise. Make sure that you're satisfied with the level of engine, wind, and road noise, and keep in mind that a short 10-minute test drive is different from a long trip or commute. Some cars make more engine noise than others, and cars with convertible tops and specialty tires, such as knobby off-road tires, can make more wind and road noise. And then there's the extra features that spoil you. Finding the most comfortable car for you starts with picking the right model, then equipping it with the features that will pamper you and your passengers. Based on our experience, these are the features worth considering for your next car. Lumbar support controls. Seats with powerful adjusted lumbar support can help the driver and front passengers adjust to needs of their lower back. Two-way lumbar adjusts the cushion in and out, and four-way versions add up and down options. This makes long-distance driving easier, reducing fatigue. For the ultimate experience, consider massaging seats if available. Wow. Heated and cooled seats. These can make a big difference on truly hot and cold days, activating much quicker than traditional heat and air conditioning. In extreme cold, heated assets can, seats can quickly warm up your behind, and a heated steering wheel is a treat that once you experience, you'll have trouble going without, and I'm having to do that, unfortunately. In hot weather, cooled seats can keep your legs from sticking to the seat. Heated and reclining rear seats. Luxury items once reserved for front seat passengers are now making their way to the rear seat. Reclining rear seats can be found in a lot of SUV models, and heated rear seats are becoming more common, too. Memory settings. Different drivers like their mirror seat positions and other settings saved to specific configurations. The memory features make it possible for each driver in a family to get their preferred settings at the touch of a button. With all the different adjustments, this can save a lot of time. Many models can identify the driver by the key fob and automatically adjust the settings. Climate zones. A dual-zone system lets the driver and front passenger set their own temperature, adjusting for personal preferences and sun exposure. In some models, even the rear seat passengers can get their own climate controls. At minimum, a rear vent is important for airflow. We found that these systems can really help to make some stress out of family travel. And just for your info, here are the rankings. Sedans under $35,000, the Subaru Legacy obviously was number one, Honda Accord, Toyota Camry, Subaru Impreza, and the Kia K5. Sedans in the $35,000 to $55,000 range, the Chrysler 300, the Lexus ES, the Toyota Avalon, the Dodge Charger, and the Mercedes-Benz C-Class. SUVs under $35,000, the Subaru Forester was number one, Honda CR-V, Subaru Crosstrek, Chevrolet Equinox, and Mazda CX-5. Two-row SUVs, 35 to 55, the Lexus RX, the Subaru Outback, the Mercedes-Benz GLC, Audi Q5, Ford Edge. Three-row SUVs, 35 to 55, Kia Telluride, Buick Enclave, Hyundai Palisade, Honda Pilot, and the Toyota Highlander. One more auto thing, and then I'll shut up about this. And this is for those of you who like pickup trucks. First drive Ford 150 hybrid pickup. The popular Ford F-150 vehicle has long been known as the best-selling vehicle in America. A 2021 redesign that includes updated interior and exterior styling, improved ride and handling, and the first-ever F-150 hybrid option suggests that Ford is serious about hanging on to that designation. The new Power Beast four-wheel drive hybrid powertrain, starting at $49,995, impresses with its mostly smooth transitions between electric motor and gas engine, and a combined 430 horsepower that feels like it has a nearly bottomless pit of power. It gets a 24 miles per gallon of combined EPA rating, but we'll report our own fuel economy findings when our testing is complete. The F-150 turns into corners with slightly more precision than before, and the ride is a bit less stiff than in previous model years. Below, we spotlight the five standard innovations in the 2021 Ford F-150. The towing technology. The 880 tow technology package comes with several useful features. Pro Trailer Backup Assist steers the 150 as the driver rotates a dashboard knob to indicate the direction the trailer should go while viewing its backward motion on a screen. Trailer Reverse Guidance provides multiple camera views of the trailer behind you, a big help when backing into tricky spots. Smart Trailer Tow Connector warns if any trailer lights aren't working properly. A mobile generator. The F-150 Hybrid comes with new 120-amp outlets in the bed that allow the truck to be used as a mobile generator, producing 2.4 kilowatts. Ford claims that it's capable of providing enough juice to run a couple of saws and an air compressor for 85 hours on a full tank of gas. An optional 7.2 kilowatt system, which includes a 240-volt outlet, could easily run a heater in your fridge. It might even provide enough electricity to run your whole house in the event of a power outage. Computer shelf. Not only will it improve the design and quality of the interior over the last year's model, but also adds some pretty cool innovations. The one that stands out the most to us is the available interior work surface, $165 option. When in park, the transitional gear selector could be folded down, allowing the center console armrest to unfold to create a large, flat work surface between the two front seats. It makes a great perch for typing on a laptop, doing paperwork, or eating lunch. Advanced driver assist systems. Unlike its competitor, the Chevrolet Silverado 1500 and the Ram 1500, every F-150 comes with a standard with a forward collision warning and automatic emergency braking with pedestrian detection. Pedestrian detection addresses a unique risk of large trucks which have compromised forward visibility. The XLT and higher trims bring blind spot warning, rear cross-traffic warning, rear automatic braking, and lane-keeping assistance. A technical tailgate. Every F-150 now comes with built-in clamp pockets on the tailgate to hold materials in place when sawing. Side-mounted cleats can be used to secure tie-downs to hold extra-long items in place when driving with the tailgate down. They make handy bottle openers, too. An available tailgate work surface includes an integrated 48-inch ruler and niches to prop up a cell phone, hold a cup, and store pencils. Mid-level Lariat and higher trims are available with a power-operated tailgate. And since we still have a few minutes to go, let's switch back to the Reader's Digest, since that killed off the end of the Consumer Reports for this month. Pets. And there's a picture of a really, really cute brown puppy with a stethoscope in its mouth being held by, obviously, the doctor's hands. Your pet questions answered. It's not easy to know how to help our animals considering they can't talk and don't always listen. We asked Katrina Warren, veterinarian and author of 4 books, our most nagging questions about how to keep our dogs and cat happy and healthy. I love my dog, but he might not be the brightest, and I sometimes have trouble getting him to do what I need him to. Do you have any suggestions? Just like a human's, a dog's intelligence can be increased through education and training. So invest time and communicate with him. Contrary to popular belief, you can teach an old dog new tricks. So if you're an older guy, it's still worth the effort. But the earlier you start, the more likely you are to achieve results. Short bursts of regular training throughout your dog's life are best. They can be brief and spontaneous. What's important is regularity. Run through simple commands before you give him his dinner. Then he'll really be keen to respond. Can he learn actual words? It's possible for dogs to understand a range of vocabulary similar to that of a 2-year-old child. Your dog may understand treat and walk. Increases receptiveness with rewards. Dogs also respond to visual cues and can comprehend human visual communication, such as pointing. Dogs are one of the few animals that understand the gesture. Back up voice commands with hand signals and your dog will respond enthusiastically. Can you save our favorite armchair? No matter how many scratching posts we bring into the house, the cat won't stop attacking it. Scratching is an innate behavior cats use to remove the outer sheath of their claws, and they don't realize that furnishings are inappropriate for this. Provide a post. Sorry about that. We had a consumer glitch here. My apologies. Provide a post tall enough for the cat to extend upward at full length and place it in front of the object you want to protect. Spend time teaching your cat to use it by playing games and encourage her to stretch out fully on the post. We are looking for a new pet. Where do we start? Buying pets online is risky because you have no idea about their upbringing or health. Considering adopting from a shelter as you would be helping pets in need, and they will be properly vet-checked. If you go to a breeder, aim to see any animal in person in the place where they were born, preferably with their mothers. The premises should be clean and the animals well cared for. Be prepared to wait and possibly travel to find the perfect companion. And there's a picture of a really beautiful white cat. How can we be sure the pet we pick will be the right fit? Be realistic about how much time and space you have, how much exercise you can provide, and how much money you can spend on care, grooming, as well as how long the pet will be left alone each day. You need to spend plenty of time with your pet, or he or he may become lonely or bored and develop problem behaviors such as chewing and barking. Energy level is also important. Some humans want a frisky dog to take jogging, while others want a lap dog to watch TV with. Take the time to find the right animal for your lifestyle. We've settled into our apartment in the city, and we desperately want a furry friend to keep us company. Is a cat or a small dog the way to go? Small size doesn't necessarily mean great for an apartment. Some small, such as terrier breeds, have endless energy and need room to run. Conversely, such long breeds, such as Great Danes, can be calm, require less exercise, and may be well suited to a smaller space. If you have little or outdoor space, consider whether you can satisfy a dog's toileting and exercise requirements. All dogs do require daily exercise. Whippets, Bichon Frise, Poodles, Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, and Italian Greyhounds are good choices for apartment dwellers. Cats may require little exercise, but activities level by breed and maturity. Consider a Ragdoll, Burman, Devon, Rex, or Persian breed. Our puppy has a bad habit of excitedly jumping up on guests as they walk in the door. It's cute now, but how do we teach her to stop jumping before she's an 80-pound Labrador? The best strategy is to teach your dog that she'll receive attention only when all 4 feet are on the ground. When she's about to jump up, turn your body away and ignore her. Reward calm behavior with treats. Start as early as you can, as it's easier to prevent this behavior than correct it. Can we keep her from running to the door, too? Dogs quickly learn that the doorbell means visitors are bringing excitement and attention. Train your canine pal to do something else when it rings, a process that requires patience, repetition, and lots of treats. Start by walking to the front door when no one is there and having your dog sit before you open it. Repeat several times over a few days until she associates the process with sitting and treats. Then arrange for someone to knock at the door to continue the process. Repeat until your dog realizes she'll get treats, but only if she sits and doesn't bark. I notice my pet has been packing on a few extra pounds lately. How can I tell how much is too much? Sight is becoming increasingly overweight, and so are our pets. It's estimated more than half of all pets weigh too much, making them prone to a raft of health issues. Stand above your pet and look down. You should see a tapered waist between the hips and the abdomen. Obese pets will have a drooping abdomen and noticeable hip and neck fat. You should be able to feel ribs but not see them. If there is a layer of padding over the ribs, your pet is overweight. We already take walks, and they don't seem to be helping. A full checkup with your vet is required to rule out underlying medical issues and make a safe weight loss plan. Many owners provide constant access to food, assuming the pet will regulate its own intake. This is especially true of cat owners. Just don't guesstimate. Measure out portion size accurately. What about treats? It's easy to fall into the trap of feeding your pets whenever they beg. However, those snacks add up. Some dog breeds are hardwired to constantly sniff out and often steal food. A strict diet can be helpful for these breeds. Another weight loss tips. Provide things for cats to climb, as well as scratching posts and interactive toys. Spend time playing with your cat, encouraging him to chase the toys to get him moving. With a dog, remember how linked her health is with your own. Numerous studies have found that dogs act almost as personal trainers, motivating owners to get up and go. Daily walks of 30 minutes or more can boost positive mental and social health benefits for all parties. The activity is good for cardiovascular health, bone density, and joint health in canines and human, and is great fun as well. Our pet has never been around a newborn. How to prepare our fur baby for a baby boy, for a baby baby around the house. Make any changes to your pet routine well in advance. For advance, if it won't be fed in the kitchen or allowed in certain rooms or on furniture, start training months beforehand. Play crying baby sounds at low level to help it become accustomed. Practice walking a dog with an empty stroller. Allow all pets to smell baby items such as diaper creams and wipes in advance. When the baby arrives, have someone else hold your little one for the initial greeting. It's fine for pets to be curious. If they ignore the baby, that's fine too. The goal is for your pet to associate the newcomer with positive experiences, so give lots of praise and pats for calm behavior. Is there anything we can do to keep kids from accidentally provoking our dogs? Children need to know the difference between animal and a toy. Dogs aren't toys and shouldn't be played with roughly. When supervision is impossible, kids and dogs should be separated. Children should also know when touching the dog isn't allowed, such as when he is sleeping, eating, or chewing a bone. We want to become a two-pet household but are worried about a cat and a dog getting along. Can we make sure they become friends and not foes? Ideally, you should acquire your dog and cat together when they're both young. This helps them get used to each other at a time when both can establish regular routines that include socializing with each other. If that's not possible, research suggests that you're more likely to be successful inducing a dog to a cat household rather than the other way around. Introduce the new pet gradually and keep it behind a closed door at first. The animals will discover each other via smell and hearing, and when introduced face-to-face will already feel familiar. Provide the cat with a place to escape and feel safe. Cats like to be elevated, so a perch is ideal. When introducing a cat and a dog, people usually worry that the cat will be more at risk. However, you also need to watch out for the dog. Cats can often try to establish that they're a boss, sometimes by swiping or scratching before running away. Prevent the dog from chasing the cat right from the start, as it quickly can become a habit. My cat's attitude has taken a turn for the worse lately. I'm not sure why. There are many reasons why some cats are cranky. Their temperament may have been influenced by their upbringing, or they may simply have been born that way. However, even the sweetest cats can suddenly become bad-tempered. The problem can generally be solved if you look for underlying issues. Pain can cause cats to behave differently. It's easy to mistake a problem as behavior when it's actually medical. So head to your veterinarian for a full checkup. Watch for changes in eating, drinking, or litter box habits, as well as hiding and an unwillingness to be touched. Many health problems can be readily treated to ease pain and its symptoms. Cats are creatures of habit, so moving the arrival of a new baby or pet or any other change in routine can cause changes in behavior. Keep your cat's environment as calm as possible and make sure she feels safe. Sometimes confining a cat to a single room with a litter box, bedding, and home comforts can help it settle a little. How can I help my pets love better as they age? Elderly dogs are less able to cope with extreme temperatures. Keep them cool on hot days and away from drafts on cold ones. Place pieces of carpet or bedding where your dog rests to help him rise from slippery floors. Help cats with grooming particularly benefit beneath their tails and around hind legs. Grooming remains important for dogs and is an opportunity to check for lumps, fleas, ticks, or pressure sores. Make sure to check claws, which may not wear down sufficiently with reduced activity. I'm having trouble getting my pet to eat as she gets older. How do I keep from losing too much weight? It's not unusual for pets to gain or lose weight as they age. However, dry kibble can be hard for older pets to chew. If your pet is having difficulty, switch to a softer food or moisten kibble with water or broth. The Sultan of Sobrex. You can tell a great ball player by his stats and his nicknames. Who was called the Colossus of Clout, the Wizard of Whack, the Raja Rap, the Prince of Pounders, the Great Bambibo, and the Big Bam? George Herman Ruth Jr., a.k.a. The Babe. And with that, we are close to running out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the